Blackman the intended receiver again. This time, Lawson's going to knock it away.
Bachman's part of the, there's the Eastern Washington Mafia. There's also a growing Wake Forest
Mafia. The Demon Deacon Mafia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which sounds wrong in so many ways.
Yeah, we might see Bachman catching passes from his old teammate, John Wolford, later in this game.
It's the footballiest time of the year.
Hi and hello and welcome to football season and the Dave Dameshek football program presented as always by Zaxby's. Go get you some of the famous chicken fingers, wings, and salads. Studio 66 positively overflowing with enthusiasm and a superstar in the sports media, one of the rising stars. Or maybe she's already risen and is now at the top of the pyramid here in the sports media. Either way, we're over the moon to celebrate, to mark the start of the 2019 NFL season, the 100th year of the NFL with the great Mina Kimes. What's happening, Mina Kimes?
So honored to be making my second appearance. I was trying to remember when the first was. I think it was mid-season.
I think it was somewhere during the 2018 season. I do remember we brought out the literal 10-foot
yes.
pole to address some important football-related matters.
I believe I said when prodded with the pole, words that should not be taken out of context, that I believed Pat Mahomes had the potential to be the greatest quarterback.
Oh, that's right. That was.
Which leads me to believe it was fairly far along in this season, because I can't imagine I would have said that earlier. I wish.
December 18th.
Okay, so
that was bold, though. That was bold on your. I think you did. You touch it?
Yeah, because potential to become the greatest.
Can I start off on a weird place? When you came in, I am somebody who's not very sort of huggy, and I hadn't seen you in a bit, and so I kind of was like, "Oh, thanks for coming," and like you didn't hug either. Matt Money Smith is also not a hugger.
I'm not a hugger.
Emma VP, former producer here of the DDFP, not a hugger. So you're not a hugger either.
I think I did that same sort of, you know, middle school dance hug with you. I saw you at Rams camp.
Mm-hmm.
I think I went in.
Did we? I see that one. I don't remember. I know I would have.
So I set the wrong precedent.
No, but because I would have recoiled from it, especially then, because it was hot out there, and I can get dewy in that kind of situation, and I wouldn't want to put that on you.
You know who is a hugger? Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how hot it is.
So let's start there, and we have so many important football matters to jump into, and we are not going to break out the literal 10-foot pole today. Instead, we'll focus on another one of our annual things, the Jenga theory. Every team in pro football is going to sustain injuries in the 21st century. The real concern is if you lose the wrong guy, much like a Jenga game, if you pull him out of the equation, the whole thing can implode. We have to figure out. We'll see how far we can get. Hopefully, we can cover all 32 teams. Of course, we're not beginners here, so we're not going to involve quarterbacks. If you remove any quarterback from the equation, this side of the New York Giants, at least. Sorry, Eddie Spaghetti and his Eli Manning retro, very tightly fitting Giants jersey there.
For real,
and I'm not saying this because we're being recorded in a public forum here, I really found you to be, in those preseason games, a revelation. Your approach to it was unlike anything I've ever heard before. I mean, you were talking in a 21st century manner, using advanced analytics that you never hear. You were very much what Romo is to quarterbacks, and like, wait, can all the guys who were quarterbacks in the NFL do that? Then why aren't they doing that? You approached it in a way that I've never heard, and I haven't heard anybody say anything other than, wow, Mina is spectacular on those broadcasts.
Well, I certainly did my fair share of talking over the refs and also interjecting at inappropriate times and not being able to hide my reactions to plays as they were happening, even as my beloved Andrew Siciliano was commenting on them, saying, whoa, you know, which you're not supposed to do. But I appreciate that. I enjoyed it a lot. I also benefited from being in a three-man booth with the aforementioned Maurice Jones-Drew for one game, Nate Burleson for three, and those guys bring so much to the table in terms of analyzing the in-game action. It's fun, by the way, to be with a former running back and a former wide receiver and seeing the different ways, the different things they hone in on, shall we say. But, you know, I felt like my job is sort of to bring something different to the table.
Well, you did so. You succeeded, Mazel Tov. And I really do think that it was probably too late in the day in 2019 for ESPN to say, hey, the Monday Night Football header that launches things, I bet you they said, well, we've already settled on it. But for 2020, I would anticipate that we'll see you at worst up in the booth for one of those. If not, maybe something more. Maybe, you know.
Watching John Wolford and Blake Bortles one week, the next week Monday Night Football seems like a bit of a leap.
Who did you like better, Nate Burleson or Maurice Jones-Drew?
I can't.
No, you could.
I can't answer.
I'm asking you to answer that.
They really bring such different things.
So you like Nate better?
I'll say this. Nate's better dressed.
I thought you were actually considering answering that question, which would delight me to no end. Maurice, yeah, you catch him at the wrong time.
Maurice is more huggable. That's where I'm going
to
come down.
Two of the greats, two of the best, and I do like to identify people. It's a fun game for me to play in my own head. Like, that person's going to make it. That person's going to be a star in 3 years. That person's going to flame out. And I did identify early, but while they were both still playing, I was like, Nate and Maurice both headed for the stars.
Maurice threw me for a little bit of a loop. Right, I think seconds before our broadcast together, asked me which colleges I got into and what my SAT score was, which was an interesting, kind of like a psychological, a little bit of a mind game.
Probably because he wanted to berate you for it. You think you're smarter than me?
I was worried he would mention it during the game, so I didn't want to tell him. He also wears shorts. It was like 1,000 degrees. But that also threw me because I would say each of his thighs is probably 4 of my torsos put together. So that was also very intimidating.
Well, Maurice, obviously one of our favorites, and he often inhabits the seat in which you are sitting currently, and will be in it as we press into football season as soon as early next week, so be on the lookout for that. In the meantime, Kimes, well, actually, very quickly, up in the booth, just because I've never gotten to do anything like that and likely never will. Joe Buck once told us the tale of actually having to make number one during the thing, and Brett Favre threw a touchdown pass as he was passing water in the booth. Any exciting story like that that you'd like to share about you or Maurice or Nate or Siciliano?
Definitely didn't pee.
No.
During a game. Definitely. I think in the fourth game, you know, which is not only in the Rams preseason, we're not really seeing a lot of starters. We're talking week 4 in Houston. It was a showdown between Joe Webb and Wolford, John Leofor.
You don't have to describe the game. Everyone knows where they were when that one went down.
And we had Les Snead come in. We did the coaches cam in week 2 with Sean McVay. And week 4, we had GM Les Snead come in.
Handsome devil.
Yeah, and I didn't anticipate. I forgot that he was coming in, and I had just eaten a ton of chicken wings, and I didn't have time to fix myself. So when we did the whole interview with him, and I realized afterwards my teeth were just full of wing, full of chicken.
I love it. That's the kind of insight that you can only get here on the DDFP. All right, let's see how much further we can get here with some insights from Mina Kimes. And we'll deviate from the Rams for a second because the big news as we record here, midday Thursday, a couple hours away from glorious kickoff 2019. I wanted to, what do you make of this Antonio Brown stuff? It's so often we say, oh, that's crazy what's happening. This is insane what's happening. And now I feel bad because I've used that word up. This is, in fact, cuckoo baluku.
It's bananas. It's bonkers. It's predictable at this point, right? Because I think we kind of know what his deal is. Well, we don't know what his deal is. And I said this to you before. I almost feel uncomfortable now weighing in because clearly – mentally, emotionally, there's something going on we do not know or understand or certainly not qualified or have the insight to weigh in on as it pertains to
I think that's
him,
exactly right.
His state, his relationship with the game, which seems pretty screwed up now. So I almost feel weird getting at that point. I mean, I think one thing that strikes me about all of this and as it plays out, like, so he has, over the last summer, as this has all gone down, he's been posting these things on social media the latest sort of the post that instigated, I guess, the showdown was he posted the letter from the Raiders demanding the fines, and I think he called them a devil, or there was some sort of.
I didn't exactly understand what he was getting at, but he. But I mean, the bottom line is he called the team that theoretically saved him from the hellish conditions on the banks of the Three Rivers on a generally well-run organization. He was extracted from that at his own will and brought over to the East Bay. And a few months later, now they're haters.
A team that's been pretty tolerant too of the whole helmet saga, but that post, Dave, it brought me back to he posted this other super strange post. It was a message he had received from Juju Smith-Schuster when Juju was in college, saying like, "Hi, Mr. Brown, I look up to you and I'd love some help." And Brown posted this, I guess, as a sort of dunk, and every rational person saw that and said, "You just made Juju Smith-Schuster look adorable." And the connective fiber between these posts is he seems to have no concept of how he's being received by the
public.
That's
right.
And when someone acts in that manner, either they really just aren't looking at their mentions and there's like a detachment from, I don't want to use reality because that would suggest we have some sort of insight into his like mental state, but he seems totally detached from anyone outside of his bubble. And that's a problem. And I don't know what it's going to take to fix that. I don't know if it's fixable, but it seems like a sort of state that cannot be addressed.
I've said before, there are plenty of guys in professional sports that come from humble roots, but it's not coincidence, as far as I'm concerned, that he and T.O., it's sad for A.B. It feels to me a little bit like he's tracking towards the second half of T.O.'s career. And I think there is it has something to do with they had especially dark childhoods. And I think that there is a bit of a victimization that he says in Hard Knocks. Everybody's treating me like I'm the enemy of the state. It's you willed this all to happen, and you went scorched earth. You didn't merely request to move on. You went scorched earth. You did denigrate and try to dent the reputation of several people in that building on your way out the door, and now you're upset that there's some portion of the population that says, yeah, that wasn't cool what you did, and he's wounded by that. Yeah, I hear you. And I think the upshot is, it's not something I like to crack wise. This isn't something I'm necessarily inclined to do. I do, though, my main emotion with it is because a lot of people, as a Steelers fan, people are hitting me up and saying, oh, you must be overjoyed by this. No, I'm not. I just feel bad, and I feel that I'm happy for my people back who are local writers and local media back in Pittsburgh who've been validated and were kind of turned into punching bags by national media. Those people are too provincial, and they're afraid of the Steelers' ire, and that's why they're not telling the truth. I think now, several months later, 9 months later, it's clear that the boots on the ground were the ones who knew what was going on.
Yeah, I think that's so often the case with conflict in the NFL. Like, it really comes down to, we always sort of graph these narratives on after the half. Well, he wasn't getting the ball, or there was some sort of, the scheme played a role in it, whatever, when often it really just comes down to dudes in the locker room, like literally any other office, not liking each other, but we can't really say that, or that's not a, like, sometimes, guy just kind of sucks and people don't like him. And I told you my feeling about the Pittsburgh situation as it was playing out in the beginning, which is, there's a few personalities here are not that great. And I still feel that way personally. It was a rare confluence, I think, of those personalities. You know, the Ben Roethlisberger thing complicates it because no one's able to go into any story involving Ben Roethlisberger without a lot of, there's so much baggage there, I think, at this point. And even though that has nothing to do with this current imbroglio, is that how you say imbroglio? That feels right. It's really hard to approach.
I liked her song.
It's hard to.
Natalie.
Well, I was torn as well because, it's very hard to look at any interpersonal conflict involving.
Wow, that was good. All right.
Any interpersonal conflict involving Ben without, there's so much there, right? And You know that.
And I guess we're having the public version of the back and forth we had about this. I just feel like that Roethlisberger in particular was martyred for the sins of all 21st century quarterbacks. And I'll say it one last time, and then hopefully we can move on into the 2019 season. But the notion that this leader of men who everybody wants to play for and the quarterback that everybody rallies behind because he gets along with everybody in the locker room exists only in probably Tom Brady, Brett Favre, and guys in movies. And otherwise, everybody else is human and flawed and has some percentage of fans in his locker room and some people that aren't dear friends who don't come over to his house in their free time and so on. And I felt cheap on his way out the door, but I think it speaks to larger issues for AB as we see playing out 9 months later.
It's crazy that Brady hasn't had a guy who has emerged as his hater. Like,
if there was one, right, we would have to know now.
You could build an entire cottage industry around this guy. Like, Bill Simmons and I were talking about this.
Name drop.
As it pertains to Rodgers and how there's like a couple of former Packers who are always happy to come out of the woodwork and take cracks at him. But that's never happened with Brady.
It is.
It's kind of remarkable.
You say narrative, and that's exactly right. And that's something else that we keep talking about over the last fortnight. But really, this, you know, if you are perceived on the right side by the national media and I guess the local as well, that Andrew Luck can retire. And if you as a fan say boo about that, shame the devil, don't you know what Andrew Luck's given to this game? Whereas if other guys, Tom Brady obviously at this point could do it, but if Aaron Rodgers or Cam Newton or Ben Roethlisberger announced their retirement 2 weeks before the season, all the histrionics that would go on. How could he do this? You know,
I will say I think Roethlisberger has earned a lot of that narrative. I mean, I think his past is pretty different from other quarterbacks, so.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Now, let's move on to something else, and I'm not moving on from that. We have many things to hit here. Let's talk about another quarterback, Jared Goff. Bottom line, worth it?
Not a divisive personality at all. That wasn't a joke. He's really like the chillest, most relaxed.
That's basically how he is. Yeah.
I can't imagine anyone having
SoCal bra if there ever was
one. He truly is. He's got that Banana Republic deal, and it just makes sense. He's just
flaxen hair, sun-kissed cheeks.
But he's also like the Banana Republic. He's like, yeah, sure. You know, I'll walk into BR with my 20% off coupon that I got in the, you know, and get a nice work shirt. And by all accounts, he's really well liked by, you know, everyone who I've talked to about him. And that's not just because I was part of the Ramley this summer. So I think that if he plays at the level he has the last 2 years, it's a great deal for the organization. Terrific. I think if he plays like he did in certain spots at the end of the season, it's not a great deal.
Well, but you said if he played those games where it felt like he got exposed a little bit, specifically up in Chicago and in the Super Bowl, those were a part of those 2 years. So doesn't he have to elevate beyond that? Or is this standard that he has set good enough?
I think there are very few quarterbacks who play at that level that he was playing at the first 12 weeks or so on a 16 and then in the postseason. I mean, Drew Brees was bad at the end of last season. Tom Brady was terrible in the Super Bowl until that last drive. So
he wasn't great. He wasn't great for the last 6 weeks.
I mean, the Miami. So I think it's kind of an impossible standard to set. So I think a lot of it is going to depend on what sort of changes the team, if the team makes any changes around him going forward. But to me, the deal was pretty vanilla. You know, just structurally, it's pretty similar to the Wentz deal. Wentz, we know that was a bit of a discount because of the injury history, them doing that early. I think Jared Goff can get out of it at 30 and hit free agency again, I believe, off the top of my head. So it could be, you know, he's kind of betting on himself a little bit there. It's not really, because that's a fair amount of time to get paid $110 million and play for Sean McVay and live in Southern California. God, it's good to be Jared Goff. But I think
especially for a guy who was a bust 2 years ago. considered.
I mean, what a journey he's been on. I think it cannot be understated how important it is that this deal was signed at just about the same time that Sean McVay also signed a new deal with Los Angeles, because he's been his fiercest advocate from the beginning, from the moment really he stepped into that building. And that's not always the case, okay? Like, not every head coach loves his quarterback. Look across the division at Kyle Shanahan. I'm not sure you get the same kind of reaction. And I think Sean McVay is the most important person in that building, him and Aaron, maybe, Aaron Donald. And I think if you've got a head coach like that who believes that he has a quarterback who can execute his offense and also elevate it at times, you don't mess with that. So
I also think it's important to disabuse people, because the common wisdom is now that if you pay a guy around about $30 million annually, that this is going to injure the overall salary cap to the point that he must take on greater responsibility to cover up the warts that have been exposed because he's taking up too much money. At this point, the cap, Matt Ryan's actually the one who told me about this. I said, $30 million, too much for a QB? And he said, not with the cap where it is. That's about where it should be, roughly 15%. Of the overall cap is, if your quarterback is a good one, at least that makes, you know,
totally
basic sense.
I hate the idea there's this sort of talking point, this hot take that once you pay your quarterback, you're done in the NFL, because, you know, people point to Seattle, by the way, as an example of that. That's not what happened in Seattle. Seattle had bad drafts and injuries. Now, it reduces your margin of error, absolutely, and Los Angeles will feel that. But the notion that once you give your quarterback a mega deal that all of a sudden you're screwed, I think is ridiculous.
It's funny you say that, though, because 6 years ago, I always felt like Brady and Manning on one side of things and then Russell and Kaepernick on the other side of things, that those guys, that Russell and Cap, were playing on rookie deals, and therefore they had deeper rosters. Yeah. And the other guys, I mean, they understood what they were getting into. Peyton, certainly, from the Colts days, and Pulley and on down, seems to be happy to point that out, that Peyton needed certain pieces around him to be comfortable and to thrive. But what do you think about Dak Prescott then? Mm. Because to me, the game I like to play to try and assess these guys is, what if you swapped Jared Goff for Dak Prescott? Would they both thrive?
I think that obviously Dak would benefit more from that exchange, just because he would get to play for McVay.
And I think he will thrive with Kellen Moore playing a 21st century offense this year.
Yeah, I think, right. Yes, I think that will be interesting. I think that, yeah, well, so by that same token, Goff would be walking into playing with Moore. I think Jared Goff would suffer, but I don't think it would be dramatic. I think he would still play well.
Now, this is the important piece, of course, because as I've been pointing out for 6 months now, it seemed to me, you know better than I do, and I'm not just I'm not being falsely deferential. You do know better than I do, but it seems to me that the Rams were based all around play action last year, more so than anybody else.
Correct.
The Patriots and the Rams both get to the Super Bowl, and they're the only two teams running under center 50% or more, and the Rams quite a bit more than that. Ergo, if Todd Gurley is not scaring defenses, and I talked to Maurice, I talked to you, I talked to people inside the Rams, say, oh no, he just wore out down the stretch, and he will be fine. Maybe they'll give him fewer carries. I just asked Maurice, what percentage of carries for Todd Gurley split between the two and three? And he said, oh, still 70-80%. They're just going to take it, let up on Gurley just a little bit. Anything with us?
I would first say that I think the Rams, you're right that their entire offense is based around play action. I believe that helps Todd Gurley more than Todd Gurley helps play action pass, personally. I'm one of those nerds who thinks that the identity of the particular running back matters less to the success of play action than the offensive line and the scheme. So I think Todd Gurley, you know, we talk about Jared Goff and how much he benefits from playing that offense. Todd Gurley is, I actually think, a bigger beneficiary. And he's excellent. This is not to, this is always, I think, the problem with when you point out that Goff benefits from playing with McVay and playing in that offense, it doesn't have to denigrate Jared Goff. It's just the facts. Mm-hmm. It benefits everybody in that offense.
I mean, it's the pick and choose of that, of like, well, but he had a Hall of right. Fame quarterback his whole career. Yeah, most guys who have all-time stats weren't the only guy on right. the field.
To bring it back to the Seahawks, you know, it's the first game of the season. I'm wearing my opportunity.
Oh, we'll get to the Seahawks. We'll get to them.
No, but it used to drive me crazy when people say, well, Russell Wilson benefits so much from playing next to Marshawn Lynch. You don't think yes. Marshawn Lynch benefits from playing next to a quarterback who can take off at any second the linebacker is terrified of?
Oh, but they had Jerry Rice. Yeah, you know who Jerry Rice had? Them.
Yeah, right, exactly. So football is a very interconnected sport. So anyways, back to Gurley. So I think that he seems healthy in the short term. I cannot speak to his long-term health and all the rumors and all that, and it's totally possible that his window is shorter than it was before. In the short term, though, this season, he looks healthy. He's looked great in camp. I have not heard anything from anyone that suggests to the contrary. I think, though, they are going to approach his usage a little bit differently. I think load management is something that they're taking pretty seriously, like Kawhi style, you know? And I think that they also schematically are going to approach the run game a little bit differently with the addition of Daryl Henderson, the rookie phenom out of Memphis, who did not do a ton in the preseason because he was playing behind a backup offensive line in a scheme that, unlike the normal scheme, did not help him the way they helped Todd Gurley with all the misdirection and all that stuff. But I saw a few things in the preseason that got me excited about Daryl Henderson. Going back to the Super Bowl, I thought one of the things the Rams could have done to counter what Bill Belichick did on defense, which, as you remember, putting six guys on the line, Hightower sitting behind them, was they could have had a better quick passing game, which is not something that's not really a part of their offense, quite frankly. They use Gurley in play action a lot, leaking out, but I actually think Daryl Henderson could be used a lot in that capacity. I think you could see both him and Gurley on the field at the same time. I think there's a lot of fun stuff that they could do that have nothing to do with the state of Todd Gurley's knee.
Boy, and you bring that up, two backs going back to that and the mid-80s offense, the Big 8 offense that Lamar Jackson and company are going to be running. It's going to be fun. I'm over the moon with excitement for the 2019 season. You mentioned you don't know if Kyle Shanahan loves Jimmy Garoppolo, and you know that I'm taking the Niners to win the AFC, to win the NFC West this year.
I did not know that.
I told you that when we were at Rams practice, and you said I don't know about their secondary, and I said, oh, but the front seven's going to be dynamite. It's going to be the best in the division. Now it's not, but
was this before or after I hugged you?
This is somewhere in there.
You're
upset with me about that?
No, I must have blacked it out.
So wait, is Jimmy G? I mean, the book is on the inside is that Jimmy G can't do it.
I don't think we have evidence that suggests he.
I know,
can.
But it doesn't make a difference. What I'm saying, or is there buzz from within? That
Look, the thing about Shanahan and him, Shanahan's always been hard on his quarterbacks. That's not a new thing. In Atlanta, I used to hear word that he was frustrated because Matt Ryan took a while to learn his offense. He didn't really get it.
Well, our mutual pal, Will Brinson, floated a darker conspiracy theory.
Oh, no.
To me is, what I'm reading is the tea leaves I'm reading, Bill Belichick liked him. Tom Brady either liked him enough to get him shipped over to a good situation or was threatened enough by him that he didn't want him as his backup and so got him shipped across. And then Kyle Shanahan, who is a QB whisperer himself, said, I want that guy. And they took him. So are all those people wrong? I'm trusting people. But he said,
Right. Maybe
Belichick was pulling a fast one on Shanahan and he dumped the guy on the unaware Shanahan.
This is my favorite thing that Bill Belichick, or I guess it's my favorite phenomena that always follows Bill Belichick, which is even when he does something dumb, we all talk ourselves into convincing ourselves that it was like when he didn't call a timeout in.
I am so pleased that somebody who is smart agrees with me on this one. I have beat this drum. I've knocked on wood since that Super Bowl. Imbuing Bill Belichick with the powers to know that Pete Carroll...
He screwed up.
He froze in the moment and should have called a timeout as that clock was running down, but then it got to be too late.
It's like half of his trades don't work out.
That's it.
Half of his
I am so glad that somebody agrees with
me.
Save this spaghetti.
But he is such a genius when it comes to in-game strategy, or not in-game, just coaching. Forget strategy. That none of it matters in the end.
I know, but there's Greg Rosenthal behind there, the boss, and he's like, Belichick worked out. I don't take it. He's one of the people who may or may not agree with me about this. I'm not sure. So you disagree outright then with my
that the Niners 49ers win the division? Yeah, I disagree with that. I mean, they've got an exciting pass rush. That's about it on defense. Name another thing other than the pass rush that you like about this.
All right. We were talking about narratives before. The narrative 2 years ago is that Kyle Shanahan was as smart an offensive mind as there was. And the duels twice a year that we were going to get between him and Sean McVay were going to delight us for as long as we could see. And now it feels to me like Sean McVay is and Andy Reid's success with Mahomes and Belichick getting back to the top has now kind of allowed us to forget about Kyle Shanahan. But that still remains true, I assume, and that's what I'm basing this around. Plus, John Lynch has, in fact, built up that defense, and it should be right up there, I think, with the Seahawks, although they now have Jadeveon Clowney. But I want to ask you about this. Muzzle tub to you that Russell Wilson cares enough about what jersey you're wearing, and he reached out to you on social media. Oh, famously, you can dig that up if you want to verify what I'm talking about, audience. But what do you make about the rumors that this offseason that Russell Wilson himself was not necessarily tethered to the Seahawks long term, or didn't desire to be a Seahawk forever? There were plenty of rumors afoot that he might want to go out to the New York Giants.
Oh, this was before he signed it.
Yeah, before he signed.
Sorry. Yeah.
I heard it was very close.
I heard it wasn't.
I heard it was. I heard it was. It wasn't something that was out there. I heard it was like, it just about happened.
I have heard that's not the case. So
really?
We were hearing different things from different people. I think the Seahawks offense is actually going to be good, even though behind Tyler Lockett, the depth at receiver is dubious at best. Suddenly, the offensive line has continuity, and they took a great leap forward last year in going from dumpster fire to smoldering embers, you know, like of an average unit. And if they can just be average, which I think that they're about at right now, they're not even the worst offensive line in the division anymore. It's delightful.
Give me the 1-2-3 of how that division finishes.
O-lines? Oh, how they finish.
No. Yeah, finish standings-wise.
Rams, Seahawks, Niners, Cardinals.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going bold. That's all.
That is a bold. Is that
I'm going?
That has to be your boldest.
I don't have the Rams going to the playoffs. That's how bold I'm going.
Why?
You know who I have going from the NFC to this Super Bowl? America's team, the Dallas Cowboys.
What?
That's right.
That's preposterous. I don't even have them in the playoffs.
All right, we'll see, Kimes. We'll see.
You are.
Put them down in pen, spaghetti. And hold on to this. Okay, let's get to it here. I want to see how far we can go here with our annual Jenga piece IDing across Football America here. Again, the Jenga theory is that everybody's going to have some injuries along the way. The real concern is if you lose the wrong player, it can scuttle your whole season. The whole thing can implode like a grand Jenga game here. And let's go around the wheel. Let's start it off with the NFC West, since we're already on that subject. The NFC champion Rams Jenga piece. Oh, and again, we don't do the quarterback because it's too easy to say, well, if the quarterback goes down, obviously that is the case. Who can they not afford to lose? This is a pretty easy one.
It is an easy one. It is Aaron Donald. Now, they think they've got an outside pass rush this season. So last season, the Rams got 15% of their pressure from the edge, which was the lowest percentage in the NFL. It's pretty much Aaron Donald, and that's it. They think Dante Fowler is going to be that dude this year. They signed him to a one-year, $14 million contract. They brought back Clay Matthews, and no one's really, you know, blowing smoke on that. But they have not been able to get to the quarterback outside of Donald, I think, over the last couple of years. So if you take him out, even with I like Fowler, I think that it would be a pretty big problem.
Hard to disagree with that one, obviously, although I do continue to think Todd Gurley. But I'll defer to you on that one. But I do think I do wonder how dynamic that offense is if Todd Gurley is never on the field.
We saw C.J. Anderson crushed it.
Yeah, that worked against some teams.
Yeah.
Didn't work against Belichick, though. Okay, let's go then to the Seattle Seahawks.
Okay, so as I mentioned, after Tyler Lockett, the wide receiver depth is a real problem. So I'm going to go with Lockett.
Great one. I like that very much. Next up, let's go San Francisco 49ers.
So I was torn on this one because I wanted, as I mentioned, I really don't like this defense behind that front line. And I think Richard Sherman's pretty much the only guy you can trust in the secondary right now. But I went with Kittle.
I would go Kittle too.
Would you? Because that pass catching core is
right. And but well, the other side of it is too that something that as a matter of fact, this is how I know we had that conversation, and I didn't imagine it at Rams camp. I said I like that Niners D, and you said, but their secondary isn't good. And I said, listen, once if you can get deep enough into the season and get into the playoffs, it's really more about pass rush, isn't it? And you said, no, that's 2 year old thinking. It's now more the secondary. It's now more important that the secondary is strong. And so dig in on that. Do you remember this, or was this all just a...
I don't think I would say that's two-year-old thinking. That doesn't.
You did. You said that was 2 years ago.
Oh, I thought you meant like...
No, not you're a child. I'm saying yes.
A toddler. Like,
yes, you're 2017. You don't get out of... Join us in 2019.
Right, yes. I think you have to have a good... I mean, look at the Patriots. Outside in. Their secondary was elite last year.
Yeah, that defense is going to be good. That's the star of the Patriots this year. The Arizona Cardinals.
This was tough outside of the quarterback. I went with Chandler Jones. Speaking of trades that Belichick lost and nobody talks about, just because he is their entire pass rush. 13 sacks last year.
It's also hard to do with a bad team. Like, well, without him, I don't think they're going to be good. I don't think with him there might not be any good either.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go NFC South now, the Carolina Panthers.
Okay. I don't want to choose a running back, but I actually think I'm going to go with McCaffrey here.
I do like beyond McCaffrey, though. I like Curtis Samuel, the promise to break out this year. And
they've got depth.
Yeah, finally. It lines up that Cam Newton finally can not have to carry the entire offense based on how they built that up there. The Atlanta Falcons.
This one was easy to me. Deion Jones.
Yeah, we've talked about that since week one. It's amazing how people have forgotten about the Falcons and that those two key defensive injuries happened in Foxborough, basically ending their season before it can get going. Matt Ryan, in-store MVP-level season, says Dan.
You know I'm the biggest Matt Ryan defender on the internet.
You know what? By these holidays, we will be talking about, you know what? I think Matt Ryan gets a gold jacket when his career's over.
I hope people remember that I planted my flag on.
You were there before I was.
Matt Ryan planet.
Well, of course, if he doesn't give up 28-3, which he did have a hand in giving away, we already would have kissed him into the Hall of Fame. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
So this is another bad team, hard to pick one situation. I went with Vernon Hargraves, which is kind of a weird pick, just because if he's not there, the average age of the secondary is 14. I did the math.
I think this is about as easy a one, but maybe you'll surprise me here. The Saints. Now that I say that out loud,
there's a couple of possibilities. I went with Mike Thomas just because I think after him, that's a real
thin. It is crazy. I mean, do you consider yourself a very serious football fan? Okay, name for me all the wide receivers on the Saints, not including Michael Thomas.
Yeah, I know. If you're not mentioning Traquan Smith, or there was a guy. I remember when he caught a pass last year, I was like, who is that? It's like an accountant. Dan Arnold.
Right. Weigh in on this one. There's some key issues that you got to come down on one side or the other before things kick off here. Drew Brees, is it done for him?
No. I think It's not, but I think he is out of my, like, MVP group. I think we saw the beginning of the end.
I mean, I guess in the 21st century sense, they could do some Patriots kind of stuff that you see. If Brady and James White can do it, then certainly Breeze and Kamara can do the same sort of thing on those choice routes that he runs endlessly that seem just about unstoppable. But if the premise is just grind this team between the tackles because we're up six in the fourth quarter, I don't think Alvin Kamara is built to do that necessarily. So I do have some concerns, and I don't think they win the division. I don't think they make the playoffs, as a matter of
fact.
That's right.
You got some heat.
That's right. Listen, this is the time for a hot take. Someone's going to remember, except me. I'm writing them down in pen. Next, the NFC East, Dallas Cowboys. Go.
Okay, who did I have? So the NFC the East, I have three offensive linemen in this group.
Really? Okay.
So with Dallas, I went with Zach Martin.
I'm going to allow it. Most human beings, as I always say, cannot identify correctly who's a good offensive lineman versus a mediocre one. I find it generally pretentious. I'll allow the entire offensive line if you want to throw that out.
Okay, yeah. I think that, yeah, we talked about earlier the absence of Ezekiel Elliott and that sort of thing, and debating who matters in an offense. I think pretty clearly we saw how much they struggled with Tyron Smith wasn't in there. And
shout out though to Tank Lawrence, the most sort of anonymous superstar in the NFL. The Skins.
I went with another offensive lineman. But here's why: this whole Jenga concept. To me, what you're looking at is not only like who's good, but how deep is the group.
Yeah, right.
I think this Skins offensive line is the equivalent of like a Jenga level that has one bar just perilously holding up the entire tower.
So the East Coast version of the Houston Texans, in other
words. Exactly. If you take out one of those offensive linemen, it's over. So I just did Brandon Scherff.
Okay. The Philadelphia Eagles.
Another offensive lineman.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which now maybe should have been.
Which makes perfect sense, yeah. Although Fletcher Cox is a good answer as well.
Well, so they've got depth there now, right, with Andre Dillard. But I kind of looked at the depth chart, and I thought if you took out Jason Kelsey, they would struggle. But Cox is probably a better answer.
No, that's a good one there. Who do we have left in the division? The Giants.
Okay, so another bad team situation. I mean, the defense.
Oh, really? Oh, so you're this is going to hurt Eddie Spaghetti's feelings. He's sitting right there. Spaghetti, do you want to weigh in on one?
I have a Giants. I'll give a Janoris Jenkins, because the cornerbacks are very, very young outside of him and inexperienced, and you have guys like Sam Beal and and they just drafted DeAndre Baker and Ballantyne. But another, I think if there's zero pass, whoever their best pass rusher is, if it's Marcus Golden, if there's no pass rush, then the defensive backs are even worse. The defense is a big question mark. So
the defense is just it's just rough right now. I think if you took out, like Eddie was saying, really any average to above average player on that defense, it's going to be a real problem.
Okay, so you're going to go it's hard to imagine not going Saquon here. And yet, I still say Evan Engram is the X factor, perhaps, of that whole division. I guess the defense.
He's great.
The defense just isn't going to be good enough to keep that team relevant. But I do think that this idea that Odell went out and so the offense is going to be meh, and I don't know what Eli's going to look like. But the offensive line should be good, and Saquon should be able to run.
The offensive line is good. It's either average to good, and I think that will keep the thing running on offense. It's the defense that's the problem with this.
We did the entire East, I'm pretty sure, so that leaves the North, the Packers.
Okay, so this is another one where I went with the skill player, Davante Adams. I think Adams, the depth in that wide receiver group is pretty thin.
Do you agree with my assessment that at least in the NFC, that's the best secondary?
In the entire NFC?
Yeah.
Because in Baltimore is in the AFC. Yeah. I think the Rams have a pretty good secondary when all their starters are healthy. So that would on the Bears secondary is really. I mean, Eddie Jackson. So he's actually my guy. We can do that now.
Let's do it. Eddie Jackson. Go ahead and say it loud.
He is like your football hipster's favorite football player.
You are so right, because I have to Jerry Orbach every time this comes up. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong, like Jerry Orbach tells Swayze at the end of Dirty Dancing. Mm-hmm. I said over and over again, why would they have taken Trubisky when they should have taken Jamal Adams? They're going to rue that decision, and obviously they don't. Although Trubisky's another question, we have to wait and see. By the way, as far as that goes, Mitchell Trubisky, another hot button issue. By the end of the season, are we saying, see, Trubisky's he's plenty good, or is like, ah, see, they're gonna have to do something there?
Me, that's a way bigger question mark than the Jared Goff type. You know, when you're looking at, okay, we had this rookie, we benefited from having him on his rookie deal for so long, we've got to make a decision about him. I genuinely don't know what they'll do. If Mitch Trubisky plays at the level he did last year, they should absolutely not proceed and get signed to an extension. But you know, he's still young. He learned Nagy's offense last year. I'm not holding out. It's totally possible that he
I agree, and I keep saying that Nagy, you could see in the first quarter, that's where it seemed. Trubisky, anecdotally, just with my eyes, I have no numbers to support that. See, I free myself from that.
No, he would script a beautiful drive.
Right, and they would get up 14, yeah. And then they would their defense would embarrass the foe, and that would be that. The thing I like about Trubisky going forward is if they use him enough to do that, is he's a big dude running the ball, and he's fast. You know, he really is the poor man's Cam Newton, or something on that level when he gets out of the pocket and intends to run with the ball. The Detroit Lions.
Another tough one.
This team has no chance this year?
I don't think so. I think that division's really tough. And they're the odd team out to me. I think that it would have to come from the defense. I was thinking, so I actually like the defensive line a lot. And I think even without Flowers, I think they'll still be able to get a pass rush. I think the secondary is really thin. So maybe I would take Slay.
I like what Patricia's trying to, what his thought process seems to be, the way he's trying to build up that offense a little bit. And Hockenson, if he is in fact a poor man's Gronk, that's a good place to start with supporting Kerryon Johnson and C.J. Anderson and grinding teams a little bit.
I love him. Rookie tight ends usually take – it's one of those positions that takes a while, I think, to catch on. So I'm not expecting a ton out of him this year.
And the Vikings.
Who did I pick for the Vikings? Oh, Danielle Hunter. That actually, weirdly, for a defense that just a couple of years ago looked so stacked at every position, still has a ton of talent, but as we see so often in the NFL, starts to lose depth. And if you take out Hunter, and I think – you saw that last year when they didn't get a pass rush in the beginning of the season. Everyone was really confused. Like, why is this Vikings defense suddenly bad? You would really, really...
It's funny because for the much ballyhooed pass catchers they have, I think, and all then that puts Kirk Cousins in the white hot spotlight. I still think what I thought at the start of last season, Dalvin Cook's got to make that offense go, and I do think he will have a good year. And yet... I think they're not going to make the playoffs. I think the Packers are going to win that division.
I agree. I think the offense is going to be awesome. I actually have some concerns about the defense.
All right, let's jump over there. Let's pace it up because the Around the NFL boys are waiting back there.
And
the boss Rosenthal's in his suit and tie and everything. Look, he runs the shop now.
Is he walking in?
Look at him. He's walking in the door.
Now I'm
sorry. You brought onion rings and food and everything? Please, take a seat. Join us for this. This will be nice. Yeah, do you mind, Kimes?
No, I could use some.
By the way, I didn't mention it, but Mina Kimes' tremendous podcast recently was paid a visit by Greg Rosenthal, so make sure you check that one out. Not too many football minds greater putting their heads together than these two. What's that?
That podcast was a hit.
And you could see eye to eye, literally.
Yeah.
You know?
That's how I like it.
I love all the podcast crossovers happening.
Yeah.
I mean, you told me to come up here early, and now you're acting surprised when I
walk in. Don't pull the curtain back. I like it to feel acrimonious. Our teams are playing this Sunday night. Please, those are for you. That was a generous move.
How are you feeling about this epic matchup coming up?
I mean, the Steelers are going to lose. I'm going to pick the Steelers to go up to Foxborough and beat Brady? Please, that's ridiculous.
Is it, though?
I just hope they don't get whipped. That's my concern.
I don't want to hear, though, that Mike Tomlin can't stop Tom Brady when it matters, when they held him to 10 points in a game that absolutely mattered and should have ended their streak of byes and maybe would have prevented them from winning the Super Bowl if, you know, the Texans didn't blow that game against the Eagles. I mean, they did it. They held him to 10 points.
I know. And, you know, I'm not saying that this gives me hope because I certainly on a human level wish David Andrews well. But from a football perspective, how damaging do you suspect this is? It's the rules that apply to the Patriots apply to no other team.
Right. We talked before the Andrews injury, I think, right?
So anyone can come and go. And as long as Brady and Belichick are there, it really doesn't make a difference. Gronk or anyone else.
Did you see, by the way, Joe Thomas, none other than Joe Thomas, one of the greatest left tackles in NFL history, came out and said that I can't remember the exact words he used. I don't want to misrepresent him, but he said a lot of the Patriots' offensive linemen wouldn't even be good on other teams. He was – Joe Thomas was
I saw that. He's right. Well, Jeff Schwartz is wrong. I saw Jeff Schwartz push back at that. I mean, yes, some guys can leave and be viable on other teams, but clearly the one-dimension or the two-dimensional aspects that Belichick likes and then convinces guys, that's the key part is I'll just do your job equals specifically just go straight ahead. I do not want you deviating from what I tell you to do. And as long as you're willing to take those instructions, you will thrive. But it has no it means nothing going forward onto any other team.
Well, Nate Solder is good proof of that. Eddie Spaghetti can can agree that he has not been the answer for the Giants. Logan Mangan, who maybe is the best offensive lineman they've ever had, is more good proof of that.
Yes.
Shaq Mason, I think, who they have now, would be good in any system. He's kind of an all-pro type of guy. But David Andrews, I'm not that worried because they love Ted Karras, who's been their backup at three positions. He's been there for a while, and he does seem like one of those guys that you just sneak in there. If one more injury happens, then they're into these guys they just traded for, and that's a problem.
Greg, it's funny that you mentioned Shaq Mason because he was my Jenga piece.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a fun one and a wild one.
Well, I was thinking
that is wild.
With this, I know, but I was trying to be a little bit of hipster, and I was thinking with the center out, you know, if you're really going backups on the inside of the offensive line, they could feel it.
Sit up straight. Why don't you?
Come on. It's a podcast.
There's a camera on you.
We're not being taped.
You don't know what's happening when you have a big-time media star in here. You don't know what's going to make it out into
the
video world. Rosenthal, all right, as you undress, why don't you tell us who you think the Patriots Jenga piece is this year?
Stephon Gilmore. I mean, it can't be Tom Brady. Stephon Gilmore. I think he's kind of an under-the-radar defensive player of the year candidate. Maybe it's just because he was covering Patriots receivers all camp, but there was a stat that he gave up 4 receptions during training camp. Mm. Brady was 4 for 19 throwing at Gilmore, and he was so good by the end of that year. And mentally, he just seems like everything Belichick's ever wanted. And now he's entering year 3. He's got a great group in front of him to make some big plays. Losing him to me would be the biggest loss other than Brady.
Well, that's for now. But come October 15th and beyond, the Jenga piece will be Antonio Brown, right?
I hope so. Bring him on.
Do you agree with my little theory that the 21st century Patriots are as close to the 70s Raiders as any team we've seen? They love bringing in these guys, the high pedigree guys that for whatever reason it got sideways somewhere else. We'll give you a try, and some of them work and some of them don't, but they'll always bring them in, and then the rest of the league wrings its hands. They have Josh Gordon. No, they got James Harrison. That can't, you know, that's –
Oh, right, the James Harrison thing. I remember everything.
And they now have fully embraced, like, we're the villains. So what? We like getting booed. If you ain't booing us, you don't know who we are.
I mean, they're not the team that had Vontaze Burfict holding back Antonio Brown while Richie Incognito looked on. What a wild scene. If you could have said that 2 years ago, that Vontaze Burfict would be holding back Antonio Brown from punching Raiders general manager Mike Mayock.
How early do the Patriots start doing the nobody believes in us thing this year?
I don't think they've ever stopped.
Yeah, if they go 2-2, you know, if they start out slow. I think they could lose to the Steelers. Their schedule on paper isn't the worst, but I think the two AFC East teams, the Bills and the Jets, are better. So if they start slow, the Steelers' defense, I really do think, is going to be really good, and they should be ahead of the Patriots' offense right now. The Patriots always spend September spinning their wheels. None of their receivers practiced in August.
They don't even care about this game. It's week one. It's in Foxborough, but – you know, New England doesn't take the beginning of the season seriously.
But counterintuitively, perhaps, because we've been informed by movies over the years, but what happens in movies in the pregame with rah-rah speeches from the coaching staff, us against the world and all that kind of, I mean, the chip on the shoulder, no one believes in us thing kind of works over the course of a season. But the idea on game day, and I really think in January's past, the reason that Schottenheimer and his protege Cowher came up short in big games so often was because they got into that whole, there's a gleam, man. This is the one chance. You'll look back on this day for the rest of your life and ask and decide, did you put it all on the, all that kind of stuff? Yeah. Psychs guys out. They're like, oh my God, I didn't know this was so important. Whereas Belichick's like, just go do your job. Just go do your job. What's up, Combs?
Can't hear myself. Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
Rosenthal unplugged you.
Did you?
He wanted more mic time.
No.
The last 10 minutes or so, I just haven't been able to hear myself.
The Jets.
Oh, who's the Jet? Well, Jamal Adams, probably.
Fair.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like that. I mean, by the way,
I guess you could go.
I don't think it's cuckoo. Let me float this at you right now. Week two, if the Jets beat the Bills in week one, I think that that week two game, Jets and Browns, decides a wild card. Or at least that team gets a big leg up, and right around mid-December, you'll look back and say that one head-to-head victory put this team in a better spot. I really think both those teams have a chance to be 9-7, 10-6.
The Jets,
Browns
and the Bills?
Or Jets?
I think the Bills do too.
I think the Bills do as well. Right.
If they win this game, and I think they'll be ahead of them. Sean McDermott year three versus Adam Gase, you know, game one.
If you buy, I don't know if it's empty rhetoric or not, but it's, you know, if you buy the idea, like defensively, if you're strong up the middle, well, the Jets are certainly that.
The Jets are real thin.
It's got to be Jamal Adams. I agree.
Okay. The Bills.
Bills, maybe Deion Dawkins. Is that weird?
Yeah, that's weird.
The defense is
trying too hard.
I can hear myself again.
I think I messed with you. I'm a terrible guest.
You did.
I came on and
sabotage.
It was blasting.
You brought
in my
onion rings
and
fries.
I messed with the wrong one.
Okay.
I messed with the wrong one.
The Bills' defense is quite deep. I think you could take out a bunch of pieces and they would still be very good.
Tre'Davious White, I think, would probably be my choice because I can't come up with anyone else.
No, but they've got like a, what's his name? Taron Brown. They've got
Taron
depth.
Johnson. They've got good players, but he's one of the only cornerbacks left that travels with the best opposing cornerback.
I also have faith in Sean McDermott's ability to figure out that position. I don't have faith in him and Dable's ability to figure out the offensive line.
Time now for a
How about
detour?
Frank Gore? I mean, if you lose Frank Gore, you lose the heart of the team.
That's what I've heard.
You lose me.
Yeah. By the way, Shady McCoy, if Frank Gore, and he is going to the Hall of Fame, Shady McCoy needs to go to the Hall of Fame. If he can put together another 1,000 yards in these next couple of years, especially on a relevant Chiefs team, if you look at the numbers, that bears out that he's right there for the Hall of Fame. Quick detour, though. Bon and Viv, Food Block with Greg Rosenthal and Mina Kimes. You can look at the two of them. They clearly eat as well. You guys could combine to eat as much as Damashek in a week, probably, is what I eat in one sitting. But either way, win, play, show, onion rings, french fries, plantains.
Ooh. Well, how are the plantains prepared?
Good.
Well, I'm going to go win, french fries. What's second?
Rings?
No, what's the word for second?
Place.
Place. You know, I'm going plantains placing. And you're rings good. In third. Rings are overrated, onion rings.
You're a good NFL employee. I don't know what win, play, show. I've never.
I have an identical view. Okay. I don't like onion rings.
I love a ring, and I could come awfully close to choosing rings for the rest of my life to the exclusion of fries. But I think at the end of it,
What's better than a little Caribbean chicken with plantains and
not
rice?
Much,
not that much,
not much. If the plantains are good and they're soft, well, the only thing that gets in the way of plantains is when you get one that's too firm. That's off-putting.
No, when the plantains are bad, though. So if we're gonna consider variance and we're talking about like any level of fries, any level of rings, any level of plantains, then plantains goes to the bottom for me.
Yeah, well, that's why steak cut fries aren't the right choice ever because you get – because there's too much inconsistent.
Almost everything is better fried, right? But I don't – like onions are one of the few things – I don't know if they're – I don't think they're better.
You don't think they're better fried?
I love onions.
I like grilled onions.
A little salt. Yeah, I love onions in general.
I like a grilled onion.
Need all this.
Have you ever had a red onion dropped into the fryer? That's another nice treat.
I also don't like the shape of them and all the way it makes your mouth feel.
Look, Spaghetti's getting upset with us.
I'm laughing. I'd actually put onion rings first.
Would you?
Yeah.
Really?
Fry second, plantains third.
He was admonishing the Around the NFL producer, Ricky Hollywood, earlier. He was like, hey, we talk real football on this show. And she was criticized.
That which was ironic because, obviously, goes without being said. But, yes, this is what we
– Does it upset you, Rosenthal, to look back there and you see that Eli jersey taunting you? Think of how much more glorious the Patriots dynasty would be were it not for Eli.
I mean, what if they had a quarterback that scored more than 17 points in that game? It wouldn't even have been close. I'm looking forward to the Daniel Jones era. I'm ready to turn the page from my small emotion, just small everything. I'm a tiny person, but like a small attitude towards Eli, and then let the Giants back into my heart with Daniel Jones.
I have turned the corner on Brady, and I admire him, and I like him. But I also want to vanquish him. We cannot like this idea like, well, he's only around for another couple more years. Then normalcy will return. That's not what we can't. The Steelers, out of dignity, must vanquish the Tom Brady-led Patriots.
Brady's
so
different
wait.
From Eli.
I'm just saying. Yeah, I mean, no, I get it, but I'm saying in the same spirit that it is not enough. You know, I admire the guy, but it won't be good enough to take his successor. By the way, Kimes, do you agree with my idea that I've said to Rosenthal, which he puts down that, and I've talked to Bill Simmons, second name drop of I've said this to him too. I don't know what you're even saying. That was him, right?
Yeah.
He, we just did our draft. He almost got
very similar to your Chris Wesseling.
He almost got kicked out of our fantasy league at the big draft. It was him and another guy. The other guy ended up losing out. So Simmons, once again, a decade into the kick out rule, the survivor style, the champion gets to kick out one foe of his choosing at the draft. And a couple of nights ago, we did it. And Simmons has not gotten kicked out because he uses this lame Kenobi Jedi mind trick that he thinks works that doesn't work on anybody, where he says, I want you to kick me out. I'm tired of fantasy football anyway. I hope you kick me out. And then he begs you to kick him out. He's like, well, this isn't going to be fun to kick him out. So then you don't kick him out.
What was that voice?
That's Simmons. That's how he talks.
That's your Boston accent?
I love David Ortiz.
He doesn't really have a Boston
accent. It's like a modified, like, snake oil salesman in a musical.
Cousin Sal, what do you think? Patriots, Steelers. All right, I've lost my way with my Simmons impression. I'm gonna work on it.
Were you gonna ask me something? I forgot.
I was going to, and that question was: if you are a Patriots fan, don't you want them the year after Brady retires to go 7-9 or worse? Because otherwise, it dents the Brady legacy. If it's clear, like, oh well, we can just keep on rolling.
Right.
And I think the biggest it's not Eli Manning, it's not Nick Foles. The biggest strike against Brady's greatness is the Matt Cassel year.
Oh, stop!
I mean, we can just keep on rolling without Tom Brady. Apparently, many teams could do that?
They didn't make the playoffs, first of all.
Okay, but you know what?
Never happens with Brady. They faced the easiest schedule, not only that year, but like one of the easiest schedules that decade. They didn't beat any good teams. It's kind of like it's remember now, and it was a great job by Belichick, but they weren't going anywhere in the playoffs with that team.
Does the Belichick Brady who matters more debate bother you?
Yeah, it annoys me because there's no answer. Why have an answer? Why try to have an answer? You can't, like,
is rising almost to your monorail.
I think Brady, you know who doesn't want that question? Is Tom Brady, clearly, or else he would retire by now. What's the point at this? He just doesn't want to let it
but
go.
But I love Belichick, so I want to see him succeed with the next, whoever's next.
Don't you find it vaguely unsatisfying that with Sean McVay and Andy Reid and Bill Belichick, what's breaking through now more and more in the last couple of years is that this is a coach's league more than it's a player's league?
Yes.
I don't like that.
You don't like it?
No, it's like it reminds me of college basketball in the early 90s.
Right. It feels anti-player a little bit.
Right? I know it's cool. I'm surprised that you agree with me because
the
football cools like you guys probably admire that. Like, you don't get it. You're watching the players out there, but it's actually.
And I did just say Sean McVay was the most important person on the Rams, but that's just factual.
Wait, were the football cools?
Yeah, you guys are like, deeply informed, really get it. You think you get it, Chet.
This is because I didn't choose any running backs as my Jenga piece.
No, well, we still have time.
I'll take it. It's the nicest thing Chet's ever said to me.
Oh, shut up. Let's roll on. And who are we missing here? No, the Dolphins. We don't need to regard them because they've given away their
Xavier
Jenga
Howard.
Pieces.
Xavier Howard.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
He's literally the only piece.
If you could really hook him up to a lie detector, there would be few guys right now more interesting to talk to. Like, what do you think, man?
What do you mean he gets to live in Miami?
Everyone describes him
as the only good player on the football team. He's making very good money. I forgot what the deal
is. But at least fans would like to think that he's steamed. That, I'm one of the best at my position, and now I'm stuck here. But anyway, let's go on. So we'll skip the Dolphins. The South is where we'll go. And let's start with the Houston Texans because – I think that the answer is the guy they just got.
Tunsil?
Yeah.
Do you feel – Or
J.J. Watt, I guess, hard to argue.
I think it's J.J. Watt because I think people are underestimating how much the loss of Jadeveon Clowney – did you see that? I pronounced his name right. Greg taught me how to say his name.
How do you say it?
Jadeveon.
How do you say Sony Michel?
Like the way you just said it.
See, I thought I heard him say at the Super Bowl, and people have been hitting me up on social media saying, why are you? Have you started saying Sonny Michel? It's because I could swear I heard him.
You might be right.
When I was speaking to him or standing there as he was talking, and I could swear he said Sonny. And so that's why I started to do that, to explain it to anyone who is dropping me a line. But anyway.
I think people are underestimating how much that pass rush and run defense is going to suffer with Clowney gone. Like, what's it at this point? I mean, Whitney Merciless, they'll use him more as a pass rusher and drop him less into coverage, and that'll help. But I think also Deshaun Watson is one of those quarterbacks who's probably more responsible for the amount of sacks he takes. And while Tunsil will certainly help, I don't think it would make a meaningful difference.
Yeah, I guess so. But I you know, all offseason we kept pointing to that the entire AFC South is built up on defenses, all four of them. But now the Texans don't really, and they were kind of lagging behind the other three as it was. But I also think they have a chance to be a high powered offense now. They could they could really dominate if they can survive for a month or so and get by and win more games than they lose. By the way, the other thing they should go and do. Get Melvin Gordon. I don't know how you make it happen, but if they could get Melvin Gordon, egad, another level entirely.
Football cools do not like that idea.
You don't like that move?
I mean, they already gave up a third-round pick for Duke Johnson, which I didn't mind.
There's nobody
I like
to get.
Duke Johnson.
I think Duke Johnson's
good enough. Duke Johnson reminds me a little
He's
bit
good.
Of Shady McCoy. You remember Shady McCoy in Philadelphia? Oh, he could only be a third-down back. I don't think he could ever have 350.
Right.
He has the same body type. He is big enough. Shady McCoy's had more carries than anyone in the NFL, I believe, this decade, but maybe definitely the last 5 years. Like, I think Duke Johnson can just go do it.
I do agree that he was underused in that regard in Cleveland.
He can run between the tackles. Statistically, he's good at it.
Hard to argue with J.J. Watt. We don't need to belabor that. Titans. Chime in, Rosenthal.
No, I know. It takes a minute.
Oh, okay.
I'm tempted to see. I haven't chosen running backs, but that's one. Probably be someone on the defense.
I'll fill the
spot.
I think it's Taylor Lewan, and I think that's going to get exposed. I think his absence is. I don't think there's a worse spot for him not to show up for than across from Myles Garrett. I mean the whatever else happens in that game, Myles Garrett is going to torment poor Marcus Mariota and expedite the calls for Ryan Tannehill.
The Browns defensive line is terrifying.
I know.
You see what they did?
Now, you're not going to hear boo out of me about the Browns. I think the Browns, I don't know. They're loaded. How can they not be good?
Dave's like off-season long psychological warfare.
It's no psychological anything. I'm telling you what I think.
You know, I feel like.
What, am I crazy that I don't see that they're loaded?
At the beginning of the summer, it felt like everyone was all in on the Browns. Oh, go up and down the depth chart. It's every position. But now it feels like the pendulum of public sentiment is swinging towards Pittsburgh. Have you felt that?
Yes, for sure. The cools are now saying it's going to – although some are creeping in on the Ravens too.
I think all three teams could make it to the playoffs.
I think it's just that the offseason's so long that you get tired of whatever your takes were in May. And so then you start doing counter ones.
It took a few months for the public to realize that the Browns didn't have an offensive line.
Yeah.
Like, I think it took a second for that reality.
I've got the Steelers in the Super Bowl. I have the Steelers.
Why do you do that? Don't do that.
Here's why. Because the last 2 years, I always have them in the Final Four. I just think their roster is that good. And I'll go to my grave believing few teams have ever, like, missed the playoffs and had a better chance to win the Super Bowl than last year's Steelers. If you put them in, they get a ball, they get a call or a ball bouncing a little different in New Orleans, and they get a three seed. Like,
well,
they could have won the Super Bowl.
Specifically how they were playing. They beat the Patriots, and they went into the Super Bowl.
And they're a good team.
Okay, you're right. Statistically, I think there's not been a team in recent years that should have made the playoffs more than the Steelers. By every advanced nerd football cool metric. But the Chiefs and the Patriots are so much better than them.
Nah,
I don't know.
I think they could.
They just beat them. They just beat them this year.
I mean, the game would have been in Foxborough. It's as simple as that. They would have no chance. But I do think they could have gone into Arrowhead because I do buy whether I think that for real, this is a fan thought, but I have talked to enough players who say, oh, that's a real thing, is that home field becomes disadvantageous when you're supposed to do it, when you have the curse of supposed to hanging on your shoulders, and the Chiefs certainly had that. Plus, a half century since we've been to a Super Bowl, and now we have Patrick Mahomes, and all we have to do is beat this mediocre Steelers defense until we go there. If that game would have happened, boy, if the Steelers would have gotten the lead, the home field advantage would have suddenly turned against them, and it would have washed down from the stands to both sidelines, and they would have been feeling the pressure. And like I say, I've talked to guys in playoffs on heavily favored teams, and they say, oh, it's the worst feeling in the world. Mm. Or it is, it's invigorating when you're the underdog doing what you're not supposed to do. You feel that thing, and it plays in your favor. All right, let's continue. South, Colts.
Darius Leonard.
That's the other team that should go and get Melvin Gordon.
I think it's T.Y. I mean, that he this year I think has a decent chance to be an all-pro, you know, a first or second team type all-pro. He's going to make Jacoby Brissett a lot better in general. Even though people are like, oh, they're pretty loaded, are they really offensively? It's really T.Y. Hilton is the one guy that's kind of a difference maker.
That's true. It's a really thin group. Didn't like DeFuncha signing. But, man, that defense is behind, like, I mean.
That's right.
It's thin.
That's why they should go get Melvin Gordon. Or even say, hey, do you not need Frank Gore up there? Can you
Marlon
give him
Mack
back to us?
Good. Stop trying to give teams Melvin Gordon. Marlon Mack's a
now
good
Gordon,
running back.
Now, Gordon with the Colts, that to me makes sense. I think it upgrades them. If you don't have to give up that much, they have cap room to they're wasting cap room. It's a waste of
time. Our pal Matt Money Smith says Chris Ballard would never do that. But
he wouldn't do a lot of things.
In the hypothetical, that would be fun. Okay, the Jaguars.
I might go offensive line here.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
But they don't you have to be good? You have to be a good player,
problem,
though.
Right.
You have to be like a standout.
Right, yeah, there's no really good, I guess Norwell's coming back, but.
I would go with Jalen Ramsey just because he's probably the one guy, if you took him out of that defense, that would hurt the most.
And he does give you the sense, for what it's worth, in the week leading up to it. It does feel like, with all the swagger and everything else, that he does create a sense of intimidation if you're going against him, right?
Yes, I would go with Ramsey. Obscure, not, you know, top player pick, though. I think if D.D. Westbrook's not in that game, Nick Foles has zero humans to throw the football.
I'm going to go with Leonard Fournette. I know that's the obvious answer, but if
they
have no chance, they have no chance in 2019 if Leonard Fournette isn't what they drafted coming out of LSU. And if they're an irrelevant team, it means that Leonard Fournette's not having a good year. Did we get everybody in that division, Spaghetti? No, yeah, we got Titans.
I feel
Titans
bad. I thought I was jumping on here just to say hello.
But now we started doing. Are you offended by this?
I appreciate it.
All right,
I mean, I didn't like it when he turned off my volume.
Yeah, that was bad.
Let's go to the West, the Broncos. One of Dave's sleeper teams in 2019.
The defense is going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
I would not go defense.
Well, I think they go 9-7, and I think that as long as they remember the lessons that the Ravens would learn every other year, when they would think, you know what, maybe we could be a pass-first team. Oh, yeah, about week 8. Oh, yeah, Joe Flacco's still our QB. We can't do that. As long as they stick to having a dominant defense, and if we assume that Mike Munchak's going to be able to make that offensive line better, and they have two nice young running backs, and if Cortland Sutton splashes at all, they have enough on offense.
It's it's Von Miller, though. Maybe I don't understand
the
Jenga piece exercise.
No, you're right.
But this is an
all. You're just choosing the best players.
Yeah. Generally, that's how I would think
but
it
can
works.
They get by if they lose him. Yeah, they
got
could.
Bradley Chubb.
In this case, though, I think Chubb and Von Miller, because that's maybe the best duo in the league, allows Fangio to do so much with his secondary in terms of disguise, in terms of everything, where you have extra guys back there and you can just bamboozle. And he's Von freaking Miller.
I think the
he's like a first ballot Hall of Famer, no question, in his prime.
Secondary has a lot of question marks, and they need the pass rush to be as good as Greg just described.
Raiders, I don't think, or well, I guess some people feel good about them. I can't imagine after this latest with Antonio Brown they do anymore. Is there anybody to flow it out? We can skip them. We'll skip right over them. Sorry, Raiders fans.
Jeez.
You want to throw one out? Go ahead.
Brutal.
Trent Brown, if he's as good as they hope he is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess without Brown, if Tyrell Williams isn't in there, it's going to be pretty rough.
Oh, yeah, that's imagine that. Who are we forgetting out of that division? Did we say Chiefs?
The Chiefs, without Clark, I don't think that pass rush is existent. I think Tyrann Mathieu you could throw up as well, because that secondary is really – the problem.
I think, you know, Tyreek Hill feels like the Jenga piece of the entire league, unfortunately. You know, I just think that's
it's,
he
no,
makes them
no,
go.
I'm going to push back on this one because Greg's best player strategy, you had me until this point. That offense is fine. I think, yes, he is obviously elevates them to a new level, but I think Pat Mahomes is so good, and I think they have sufficient weapons that they'll still be really, really good without him.
When
I think
Mina
the defense,
was,
if you
but then it, but it could be like greatest of all time with them. I don't know.
People have convinced me in the last week that the Chiefs' defense not only didn't get better, it got worse in the offseason.
I don't think that's true. I think just the coordinator change alone helps too, but I don't think that they got significantly better.
Chargers.
They already lost him.
I know.
I mean,
now I think they can get by without him.
I mean, you could. You're talking Derwin James, but you could make the case it was Russell Okung because he's being replaced by a second-year undrafted guy who was so bad in his brief time last year that he got benched for Sam Tevi, who turned out to be one of the worst tackles in the league and is still their tackle. So their two tackles are rough. But I would go with those guys gone. With Keenan out? No.
Yeah, I think they're okay at receiver. I think it would be...
They're loaded. That's what you
They're
realizing.
Still good, but they're missing three of their best 8 or 9 players.
Maybe Casey Hayward. I think...
It's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, they've played without Bosa. They played without Ingram. They brought in Adderley and Tillery. By the way, Lamp didn't win the job. Did you see that?
A lot of Forrest Lamp hype. You know, just no second-round guard has ever been talked about more than Forrest
Lamp.
That
offensive line is...
Let's not talk about him any further. I don't want to keep the other fellows' heroes waiting any longer here. And now I'm losing my microphone. What gives? Let's round it out here. AFC North, Baltimore Ravens... Greg Rosenthal, one of their great supporters, and I happen to love what they're trying to do as well. I also, though, believe, from what I've heard, people who are in touch with the insiders in that building, even they understand that the high end for them is 10-6 at any given time. They are never a 13-3 team, and they're never a 3-13 team playing the style of ball they intend to play this year. But they're a middle-of-the-pack team that at its highest is probably, like I say, 10 wins.
You win 10 games, you go into the playoffs.
Right.
You're weird. You're a challenge for every team from game to game if they're willing to get
weird. I mean, imagine the preparation that goes into that. And on the other side of that, you're going to be physically beaten.
Yeah, I'm going to go Matt Judon. How about you?
I would go Marlon Humphrey. Of all the teams you brought up, actually, the Ravens are weirdly the toughest. I don't know. It kind of shows they don't really have –
what's his name?
Top frontline talent.
They lost their slot corner. Or they lost one of the – they lost some depth at the –
they lost not Ladarius Webb.
Imagine being an NFL defender out on the field, and it's not just, oh, they're running the wishbone like Barry Switzer would. They have Mark Ingram doing it, and they have Justice Hill doing it, and they have Gus Edwards doing it, and Kenneth Dixon and Lamar Jackson. Different kinds of runners. Like, wow, who has the ball, and wow, how do I tackle this guy versus that guy? Like Justice Hill versus Gus Edwards are two very different kind of human beings running with the football. It's going to be a lot to handle.
I love it.
It'll be fun to watch.
I'm worried about the absence of a pass rush, which is why I chose Judon.
Bungles.
This is tough.
Vontaze.
It's probably like Geno Atkins or something.
Yeah, I guess Geno. Okay, we'll move past them quickly. The Cleveland Browns.
Ooh.
This is an easy one.
I would go like J.C. Treader, Joel Bitonio. This
wow.
Well, I mean, if they lose any of the good offensive linemen, that's a
nightmare. Fair point.
But the thing that makes him potentially special is Myles Garrett, right?
Yeah, that would have been my choice.
I mean, he's so good, but I think they've got so much talent now on that D line. They would go from being, you know, elite to just good.
See, Rosenthal's bringing me down his well of best player.
No, I don't like it. You're ruining the game.
All right, last one.
I mean, let's be real. If you ask the coaches to play this game, how many players does it take to get the J.C. Treader? Give me a break.
Listen,
please, she's our guest. You know, I mean, well, she gave her the onion rings, and which she didn't like. She doesn't like onion rings. So you force those upon her. Now you're denigrating.
Those are for you, too. You're the host. You know,
thank you.
We had
all right, let's round it up here. Oh, and by the way, the last question, everybody has to be on the record. It's the same thing as the Chip Kelly thing 5 years ago. Will it work? Won't work? Will the Ravens offense work?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, we'll look back at Christmas, and we'll say, I'm on the right side of history. Okay. I hope it does. It'll make pro football more fun. I just hope they don't win the division. Speaking of which, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Shouldn't you go first here?
Who do I think their Jenga piece is? I'm going to take – I mean, it's too easy to say Juju, but really, I don't know what would happen with that offense if they don't have Juju. And as a matter of fact,
I think
Benny Snell, I mean, I think they could probably go get a running back off the street who would be halfway decent behind that offensive line. I don't know. It's lame to say DeCastro. Or, I mean, it's pretentious of me to say DeCastro or one of their offensive linemen.
But their line is so good, it feels like if they lost one of them, they could compensate. Although,
oh, I'll tell you who it is. Well, yeah, I mean, again, they don't have depth on the defensive line either. So if they lose any of those three guys, Hayward or I guess Tua to a lesser degree, but I think it's also Joe Hayden. I think that's who I end up going.
That's a good pick for me because Greg's a lot higher on the Steelers secondary than I am. I remember we clashed on this subject.
I'm buying like the camp piece hype. You know, from your Steelers writers, that, ooh, Artie Burns looks better. Ooh, Cameron Sutton.
That's right.
Ooh,
if Artie
Edmonds,
Burns is a
Terrell
spare
Edmonds
part,
looks okay.
Instead
know.
Of the savior, if Artie Burns as a nickel can go in there and do something, and then the defense. Really
I think part of it out. Is I like a lot of fans like Mike Tomlin and look at that roster and see it's very talented and can't understand why their defense.
We
is
own
better.
That. We understand that. Obviously, we accept this challenge and we're ready to face it. Like somebody said to me the other day, and it might have been the aforementioned Simmons. No, it was Kevin Hench. Said to me this, and it's a great point. Like when Bill Belichick watches Hard Knocks, he must just like, what is John Gruden talking about? Like Bill Belichick, all the platitudes and malaprops and all the nonsense. Like what are these guys talking about? You don't have to do any of that. Who told you that this was a part of the drill here? Movies?
You can't imagine Belichick being like, you with me one time, knock on wood.
Yeah. Just do your job. Listen to what I'm telling you to do and everything will work out just fine. All right, listen. Greg Rosenthal, what a pleasure. More than a cameo, really. And he brought food and everything. Classy move on his part. Mina Kimes, always welcome here in Studio 66. Proud of you for, not my place to tell you, we're proud of you, but happy for your grand success. One of the nicest people in the business. So next stop, the Stars and the Monday Night Football booth. That's what I said for next year. What do you think about that, Rosenthal?
I think that's perfect.
You would like to see that?
Yeah, third in the booth. I think it adds a lot of value. You have a non-ex player, a little different perspective.
Yeah, but what about what she said about J.C. Treader?
That's fun. Get Twitter right. Mad at you.
Go get him, Kimes. Make sure you listen to the Mina Kimes podcast, of course, around the NFL. And Greg Rosenthal pretty much everywhere on every NFL media platform now. NFL Now. Anywhere else to find you, Rosenthal?
We're doing a pick show that starts next week.
A pick show. There you go. So make sure you check that all out. Greg Rosenthal, Mina Kimes, thanks for listening. Football season is here. We'll kibitz with you after week one to make sense of all of it for you. Until then, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.